two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Jazz Notes Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Anderson. A very happy Tuesday to everybody out there. This is going to be part two of my interview with Walt Perrin, Utah Jazz VP of Player Personnel. Big thanks to Walt for doing this. If you missed part one, I released it Wednesday of last week, so make sure you go and check that out. Walt was excellent and sat down and talked to me a little bit about how teams are preparing for the draft right now with the coronavirus pandemic having sidelined all of college basketball. It's preventing NBA teams from getting together. Of course, that means the scouts are doing everything over Zoom. It means they're not having any in-player workouts, which with the playoffs set to start coming up this weekend, that's about when the Jazz would usually start having some of these players in. It's one of my favorite parts of the season. So I'm bummed I'm not going to see it. I'm not going to see those players this year, I don't think. And, you know, I'll tell you from my personal experience, seeing players in person really does give you an idea of why players climb draft boards, drop down draft boards. Just when you imagine the amount of work you have to do on a player to get his body right to get to the NBA versus some of these guys who come in with more NBA ready bodies, you understand why a guy might be a lottery pick and why some guys might be a early second round pick. The skill sets can be very similar, but the amount of work you have to put into a player to get them to a point where they can contribute can be significantly different. And it's not just bodies. It's obviously a lot beyond that, but you get to meet different players' personalities and see what that's like and see how they deal with media, and it's really revealing. It's one of my favorite parts of my job. So I'm bummed I'm not going to be able to see it this year, but hopefully we'll be able to salvage the draft. We know it'll happen at some point, just in what regard, we're not totally sure yet. So here in part two with Walt Perrin, I talked to him a little bit about how teams use shorthand to prepare for the draft. And what I mean by that, and it's my first question here with Walt, do you compare drafts to other drafts? I know it's common in the NBA circles to say, okay, is this draft 2003 or is this draft 1996, which brought us Kobe and LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Allen Iverson and Ray Allen, all these stars. Is it like, do teams do that? Or do you have to look at each draft individually? And then we dive a little bit deeper into where the Jazz are as far as separating this draft out into tiers, which is something teams do. Is it top five and then there's a drop-off? Is it top three and then there's a drop-off? Is it top 15? You know, if it's the top 15 guys, you might not have a very good draft, but it also means picks 15 through 30 are so up in the air that you find a Rudy Gobert or you find a Giannis Antetokounmpo, which we've seen happen in drafts before, when the top half of that draft really wasn't any good, you end up with some stars in the second half. So it was fun talking to Walt about that and what he thinks about this draft. Then we talk a little bit about his love for basketball. It's a real dedication. You have to give up a lot. You have to sacrifice a lot, even though obviously, you know, it's a nice lifestyle in some ways, financially certainly, to work in the NBA. You have to give up a lot to scout players, to be on the road, to live on the road. I asked Walt about what's basketball done that's made it worth it for him. And then beyond that, moving forward, I think there's some questions just about what the value of the draft is in the NBA. So I ask Walt about those questions. Make sure you listen to the whole podcast, and you can always rate us on iTunes. Let us know what you think. Here's my interview with Walt Perrin. Looking at drafts, do franchises, organizations, do you hear people comparing this draft or any draft to another draft? I think we tend to do that in the media a lot. It's pretty good shorthand to just say, hey, this draft reminds me of, you know, whether that's the Jabari Parker, Andrew Wiggins draft, or the Alex Len, Nerlens Noel, Anthony Bennett draft, which was panned. Do you notice people comparing one draft to another, or is that dangerous to do?
I don't know what other franchises are doing. I will say this, that every once in a while, we may compare drafts to drafts. But when you do that, it's got to be at the same stage of the draft. Because as we all know, last year's draft cannot be, people cannot say if it was a good, bad, indifferent draft until 2 or 3, 4 years down the road when those guys have either shown progression or have not shown that they should have been as drafted as high as they've been. I think the media, to tell you the truth, Ben, does more of that comparing drafts than franchises do. We look at each draft as an individual draft. This is this year's draft. This is what we have to look at. This is what we have to evaluate. We can't evaluate them versus other drafts.
Yeah, I guess if you go back and look at the Wiggins and Jabari Parker draft that we've talked about, even though it's put a lot of good players in the NBA, it never turned into 2003 or 1996, and there's danger there. But then at the same point, you look at that 2013 draft, which was Oladipo and Len and Nerlens Noel, and you kind of say, okay, that draft was only so-so, but you really dive into it, and you got Victor Oladipo, who's an all-star. Steven Adams is a longtime starter in the NBA. KCP's coming into his own, as I mentioned, as a good player on a contender. CJ McCollum's fantastic. And then you end up with a really good player like Rudy Gobert and Giannis Antetokounmpo, who are potential, you know, future Hall of Famers. I guess that's where that danger comes from.
Exactly right. So that's why I say you can't look at how good a draft is for a few years before you can evaluate fully.
So at this point in this draft process, are you separating it out into tiers, or is it way too early?
We've started the process, and we will be tweaking it as we go forward. I think, again, because this year may be totally different than anything we've ever experienced, the tweak may be a little different than in the past. Past, we've had the workouts and the interviews to help us tweak the buckets, the tiers, whatever you want to call it. This year, we may not have workouts. We don't know for sure yet. So, again, as we've talked about earlier, that's a piece of the puzzle we may not have. So, do we have an incomplete puzzle when we try to finish the whole thing? We have started the process already.
Is it separated now into the top 100 guys? Is the number way bigger than that? Is it smaller than that?
The draft list is always a lot bigger than 100. And you have to eliminate players as you go forth throughout the year. So where is it now? I think we try to have at least a draft of 100 players because even though only 60 are drafted, we're still looking at G League team. We're still looking at Summer League. If we have some Summer League, we're still looking at two-ways, Exhibit 10s. We're still looking at if we may want to buy a pick in the second round. Is that guy still going to be available? So you got to have a lot more than 60 players on your draft.
Does having some of those options you talked about, the two-way players, the G League, does that make your job easier because there's more leeway to kind of test players out after you pick them up? Or does it make your job harder because there's just simply more work to do?
I don't think it matters one way or the other. We're going to do the work regardless of if we have, if we're going to do Exhibit 10s or two-ways. Two-ways are new. since the last couple of years. I think with the G League team, what we've done since we have our G League coaches, and Bart's in charge of the GM for the Salt Lake Stars, we will give them players to look at for their team. They will look probably a little harder and a little deeper at guys from, say, and I'm just throwing out a number, say from 50 to 100, as guys that they can see that possibly could be on the Stars. My job, and along with our scouts, is to concentrate more so on the first round, especially, and then early second round or any second round picks we have. But since we don't have a second round pick this year, a lot of that will fall on the junior coaches and Bart in terms of getting deeper into the evaluations of those players.
Is there ever a situation where, let's say you own the 60th pick in the draft or the 59th pick in a draft, and you've got a player on your board who's, you know, 59 or higher than that? Is there a reason to not draft a guy there with that spot and let him fall out of the draft?
Yes, there is a little bit of an advantage. I don't want to go into it, though. But yeah, there could be an advantage of, say, as you mentioned, if you have 59 and you really like a guy, but you take somebody else and let the guy you really like fall into free agency.
Yeah, just looking at what you did last year where the team bought all those picks late in the draft and how you handled that, it was just something we'd never seen before. And then, you know, seeing what you've done when you've had the 59th or the 60th pick in the past before.
Well, the one disadvantage of it, if you whack a guy and you let him go, he becomes a free agent to everybody. So another team may be able to outbid you or may have a better situation for him. So that's the disadvantage for that.
Okay, so shifting now towards the 2020 draft, can you put a label on it at this point? You know, it's a young draft or it's a deep draft, or can you put a label on it yet?
I would say, again, it's still early because we haven't got the list of players who are going to put their names in the draft. So it could easily change in the next 2 weeks. I would say it's a draft of equality. I think that anything that you look at from outside the lottery, I would say from 15th pick to the 30th pick in this year's draft, you could probably have, and it's only 15 spots, 16 spots, you could probably have 40 guys that you're looking at, maybe even more. That's what I meant by equality. I think there's an equal number of good players from 15 on down, even getting down into the 40s, and it's who you like in that particular range that's going to dictate whether or not you take them. There could be players taken in the late teens, early 20s that other teams may have in on their draft board at 35 or 40.
So not that there's ever a ton of juniors or seniors anymore that do this, but what would you characterize this as, a young draft or younger than most other drafts?
I think as most drafts, and again we're waiting on them, I think it's going to be a young draft. As most drafts in the lottery area, you got all young, mostly young kids. You're not going to have very many seniors or even juniors. And then as you get down into the late teens and the 20s, now you become somewhat of an older draft because you're looking at proven guys. You know what you're going to get. You don't know for sure what the younger guys in that range, what you're going to be able to, how much potential they may have to get a lot better. So, I, again, you know, looking at it as a whole, I would say it's basically about the same. The young part of the draft is always going to be early, and then the older part of the draft slides into the night in the late teens and 20s.
Okay, so two final questions for you, but I'm going to make that a loose final two because I might change my mind. When somebody who doesn't watch basketball asks you what you do, Walt, what do you tell them?
had that question many, many times, and I always say, well, I watch basketball for my life. And they always say, well, are you a fan? Are you, what team are you like? What school are you from? I say, well, I like just basketball. I'm not for, I don't cheer for anyone. I just want to see a very good basketball game. And if they continue that, they'll say, and I'll have to eventually say, well, I'm a scout. And they'll, of course, naturally ask what team, and then I probably will tell them. And they say, wow, that is an amazing job. And I say, well, for the most part, it beats a 9-to-5. But it's a lot of travel, and it's tough on the family. And they say, you may be right. So that's how it goes.
Okay, so I lied. I am going to add more questions. You mentioned being a fan of basketball. Why? What do you love about basketball?
I grew up playing soccer. I grew up playing baseball. I grew up playing basketball. Played football until I got to high school. I was too small to play on the team. I'm from a very, very good high school in the Chicago area. They had very good football programs throughout the year. So, I decided to play soccer instead of playing football because I was too small. Basketball has always been something I would play during the summer. It was always something I played with friends. It was always something that I had a passion for, more so than soccer, more so than baseball. Also, coming up from the Chicago area, it was a sport you played inside and not outside in the harsh conditions of Chicago. So that helped me that way. And then as I kept going through basketball, I was able to, I don't want to talk about myself too much, but I had a fairly good feel, fairly good basketball IQ. I had the ability to help my teammates be good players. And it just drew me in terms of being a passion of trying to get better at playing basketball. And then once I finished playing, started teaching high school, I was a basketball coach. Again, I was a basketball coach and a baseball coach. But once the opportunity came for me to move on from high school to college, it was basketball and not any other sport. So as the famous baseball player said, basketball has been very, very good for me.
Okay, so this is the final question. When you look at your job and you look at the draft, is the draft more important now than it was 10 years ago? Is it less important? Which direction is the value of the draft trending?
That's a good question. In terms of me, I think the draft is always important because we are a small market team. So you always have to be able to find talent that is good or talent that you can develop and be able to supplement your team with free agents that's going to cost more money. So and where I've been Minnesota, Detroit, and Utah. I would say in Detroit, it was a little bit a combination of both, but with the other two franchises, Minnesota, when it was first getting started, and the Jazz, I think it's important that we get the draft correct. Not to say we don't get free agency correct, but I think it's very important for us to get the draft correct, because it gives us growth, it gives us controlled contracts. It gives us ability to grow these players into stars in the future with our developmental staff. To answer your question, I think the draft for me.
He's the vice president of the player personnel for the Utah Jazz, Walt Perrin. Walt, I always appreciate you giving me some time, whether that's in person or certainly now on the phone. I appreciate it. Thanks. There he was, Walt Perrin, part two. I thought great stuff from Walt. I hope you have a better sense of the draft. I'm not sure if it's going to get pushed back from June 25th. The NBA has asked. I know, teams from the NBA have asked if that's something that's possible to be done. as they're just trying to figure out if they can finish the regular season or not. There's really nothing that says you can't have the draft during the season, especially if you're not bringing these players in for workouts. But teams just may want every opportunity they can to have a little bit more time to gather information about these college players, though there's some impetus certainly for college players to not have to wait to see if they're going to get drafted on whether or not they should return to college next season, especially if you're not going to have the draft until, you know, September, if we end up having the regular season stretch that long. So that's something to keep an eye on. That'll do it for this episode of the Jazz Notes Podcast. I've got another one coming out Thursday, so make sure you stay tuned for that. Like us on iTunes, subscribe, and leave us a review. We appreciate it. Read us at kslsports.com. You can find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. This is your Jazz Notes Podcast.